Chapter 9. When your mind is racing along from subject to subject and strikes an inspiring one, open your mouth and begin talking upon that matter, or take your pen and use that. It will interest your mind and concentrate it, and it will pursue the subject with satisfaction. It will take full charge and furnish the words itself. Why? But don't I tell it what to say? There are certainly occasions when you haven't time. The words leap out before you know what is coming. Why? For instance? Well, take a lash of wit repartee. Flash is the right word. It is out instantly. There is no time to arrange the words. There is no thinking, no reflecting. Where there is a wit mechanism, it is automatic in its action and needs no help. Where the wit mechanism is lacking, no amount of study and reflection can manufacture the product. Why? You really think a man originates nothing, creates nothing? The thinking process, I do. Men perceive, and their brain machines automatically combine the things perceived. That is all. Why? The steam engine? It takes 50 men 100 years to invent it. One meaning of invent is discover. I use the word in that sense. Little by little they discover and apply the multitude of details that go to make the perfect engine. Watt noticed that confined steam was strong enough to lift the lid of the teapot. He didn't create the idea, he merely discovered the fact. The cat had noticed it 100 times. From the teapot evolved the cylinder, from the displaced lid evolved the piston rod. To attach something to the piston rod, to be moved by it, was a simple matter, crank and wheel. And so there was a working engine. One by one, improvements were discovered by men who used their eyes, not their creating powers, for they hadn't any, and now, after 100 years, the patient contributions of 50 or 100 observers stand compacted in the wonderful machine which drives the ocean liner. Why? A Shakespearean play? The process is the same. The first actor was a savage. He reproduced in his theatrical war dances, scalp dances, and so on, incidents which he had seen in real life. A more advanced civilization produced more incidents, more episodes. The actor and the storyteller borrowed them. And so the drama grew, little by little, stage by stage. It is made up of the facts of life, not creations. It took centuries to develop the Greek drama. It borrowed from preceding ages. It lent to the ages that came after. Men observe and combine, that is all. So does a rat. Why? How? He observes a smell, he infers a cheese, he seeks and finds. The astronomer observes this and that, adds his this and that to the this and that's of 100 predecessors, infers an invisible planet, seeks it and finds it. The rat gets into a trap. Gets out with trouble, infers that cheese in traps lacks value, and meddles with that trap no more. The astronomer is very proud of his achievement, the rat is proud of his. Yet both are machines. They have done machine work, they have originated nothing, they have no right to be vain. The whole credit belongs to their maker. They are entitled to no honors, no praises, no monuments when they die, no remembrance. One is a complex and elaborate machine, the other a simple and limited machine, but they are alike in principle, function, and process, and neither of them works otherwise than automatically, and neither of them may righteously claim a personal superiority, or a personal dignity above the other. Why? An earned personal dignity, then, and in personal merit for what he does, it follows of necessity that he is on the same level as a rat? His brother the rat. Yes, that is how it seems to me. Neither of them being entitled to any personal merit for what he does, it follows of necessity that neither of them has a right to arrogate to himself personally created superiorities over his brother. Why? MM. Are you determined to go on believing in these insanities? Would you go on believing in them in the face of able arguments backed by collated facts and instances? O.M.M. I have been a humble, earnest, and sincere truth seeker. Y.M.M. Very well. O.M.M. The humble, earnest, and sincere truth seeker is always convertible by such means. Y.M.M. I am thankful to God to hear you say this, for now I know that your conversion, O.M.M. Wait. You misunderstand. I said I have been a truth seeker. Y.M.M. Well? O.M.M. I am not that now. Have you forgotten? I told you that there are none but temporary truth seekers, that a permanent one is a human impossibility. That as soon as the seeker finds what he is thoroughly convinced is the truth, he seeks no further, but gives the rest of his days to hunting junk to patch it, and caulk it, and prop it with, and make it weatherproof, and keep it from caving in on him. Hence the Presbyterian remains a Presbyterian, the Mohammedan a Mohammedan, the spiritualist a spiritualist, the Democrat a Democrat, the Republican a Republican, the monarchist a monarchist. And if a humble, earnest, and sincere seeker after truth should find it in the proposition that the moon is made of green cheese, nothing could ever budge him from that position. For he is nothing but an automatic machine, and must obey the laws of his construction. Y.M.M. After so, O.M.M. having found the truth, perceiving that beyond question man has but one moving impulse, the contenting of his own spirit, and is merely a machine and entitled to no personal merit for anything he does, it is not humanly possible for me to seek further. The rest of my days will be spent in patching and painting and puttying and caulking my priceless possession and in looking the other way when an imploring argument or a damaging fact approaches. Dash 1. The Marquess of Worcester had done all of this more than a century earlier. Why, instinct and thought, young man. It is odious. Those drunken theories of yours, advanced a while ago concerning the rat, and all that strip man bare of all his dignities, grandeurs, sublimities. Old man. He hasn't any to strip, they are shams, stolen clothes. He claims credits which belong solely to his maker. Why? M.M. But you have no right to put him on a level with a rat. O.M.M. I don't morally. That would not be fair to the rat. The rat is well above him, there. Y.M.M. Are you joking? O.M.M. No, I am not. Y.M.M. Then what do you mean? O.M.M. That comes under the head of the moral sense. It is a large question. Let us finish with what we are about now, before we take it up. Y.M.M. Very well. You have seemed to concede that you place man and the rat on a level. What is it? The intellectual? O.M.M. Inform, not a degree. Y.M.M. Explain. O.M.M. I think that the rat's mind and the man's mind are the same machine, but of unequal capacities, like yours and Edison's, like the African pygmies and Homer's, like the Bushmen's and Bismarck's. Y.M.M. How are you going to make that out when the lower animals have no mental quality but instinct, while man possesses reason? O.M.M. What is instinct? Y.M.M. It is merely unthinking and mechanical exercise of inherited habit. O.M.M. What originated the habit? Y.M.M. The first animal started it, its descendants have inherited it. O.M.M. How did the first one come to start it? Y.M.M. I don't know, but it didn't think it out. O.M.M. How do you know it didn't? Y.M.M. Well, I have a right to suppose it didn't, anyway. O.M.M. I don't believe you have. What is thought? Y.M.M. I know what you call it. The mechanical and automatic putting together of impressions received from outside, and drawing an inference from them. O. Very good. Now my idea of the meaningless term instinct is that it is merely petrified thought, solidified and made inanimate by habit, thought which was once alive and awake, but it become unconscious, walks in its sleep, so to speak. Why? Illustrated. Take a herd of cows, feeding in a pasture. Their heads are all turned in one direction. They do that instinctively. They gain nothing by it. They have no reason for it. They don't know why they do it. It is an inherited habit which was originally thought, that is to say, observation of an exterior fact, and a valuable inference drawn from that observation and confirmed by experience. The original wild ox noticed that with the wind in his favor he could smell his enemy in time to escape. Then he inferred that it was worth while to keep his nose to the wind. That is the process which man calls reasoning. Man's thought machine works just like the other animals, but it is a better one and more Edisonian. Man, in the ox's place, would go further, reason wider. He would face part of the herd the other way, and protect both front and rear. Why? Did you say the term instinct is meaningless? I think it is a bastard word. I think it confuses us. For as a rule it applies itself to habits and impulses which had a far-off origin in thought, and now and then breaks the rule and applies itself to habits which can hardly claim a thought origin. Why? Give an instance. Well, in putting on trousers a man always inserts the same old leg first, never the other one. There is no advantage in that, and no sense in it. All men do it, yet no man thought it out, and adopted it of set purpose, I imagine. But it is a habit which is transmitted, no doubt, and will continue to be transmitted. Why? Can you prove that the habit exists? You can prove it, if you doubt. If you will take a man to a clothing store, and watch him try on a dozen pairs of trousers, you will see. Why? The cow illustration is not, sufficient to show that a dumb animal's mental machine is just the same as a man's, and its reasoning process is the same? I will illustrate further. If you should hand Mr. Edison a box which you caused to fly open by some concealed device, he would infer a spring, and would hunt for it and find it. Now an uncle of mine had an old horse who used to get into the closed lot, where the corn crib was, and dishonestly take the corn. I got the punishment myself, as it was supposed that I had heedlessly failed to insert the wooden pin which kept the gate closed. These persistent punishments fatigued me. They also caused me to infer the existence of a culprit somewhere. So I hid myself and watched the gate. Presently the horse came and pulled the pin out with his teeth and went in. Nobody taught him that. He had observed, then thought it out for himself. His process did not differ from Edison's. He put this and that together and drew an inference and the peg too. But I made him sweat for it. Why? It has something of the seeming of thought about it. Still it is not very elaborate. Enlarge. Suppose Mr. Edison has been enjoying someone's hospitalities. He comes again by and by, and the house is vacant. He infers that his host has moved. A while afterward, in another town, he sees the man enter a house. He infers that that is the new home, and follows to inquire. Here, now, is the experience of a gull, as related by a naturalist. The scene is a Scotch fishing village, where the gulls were kindly treated. This particular gull visited a cottage, was fed, came next day, and was fed again, came into the house, next time, and ate with the family, kept on doing this almost daily, thereafter. But, once the gull was away on a journey for a few days, and when it returned the house was vacant. Its friends had removed to a village 3 miles distant. Several months later it saw the head of the family on the street there, followed him home, entered the house without excuse or apology, and became a daily guest again. Gulls do not rank high mentally, but this one had memory and the reasoning faculty, you see, and applied them Edisonially. Why? Yet it was not an Edison, and couldn't be developed into one. Perhaps not. Could you? Why? That is neither here nor there. Go on. If Edison were in trouble and a stranger helped him out of it, and next day he got into the same difficulty again, he would infer the wise thing to do in case he knew the stranger's address. Here is a case of a bird, and a stranger as related by a naturalist. An Englishman saw a bird flying around about his Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.